As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's the Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, PSG, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid. What's up with all the big teams getting beat this weekend? And how the Merengues aren't the only hot club PSG stars like going to. How Luis Suarez had Barcelona's number and how they still have his. Empoli's car dealership nightmare and how no one's actually bothered about the Nations League. Plus, Bernard Tapie bows out. We have a final curtain call for the man who ruled Marseille in Europe and broke all the rules to do it. All that and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Tuesday, 5th of October. Listener, thank you for joining us. It's a European edition of the Totally Football Show with Julien Laurence. Hello, Jules.
Bonjour.
Raphael Honigstein's also with us.
Hello.
So is Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, James.
And we're joined by James Horncastle too.
Hello.
James Horncastle. Yep, there he is. He's pumped. He's pumped for the Nations League. The Nations League.
You know what? I can't get out of my head is, I don't know if it's because the proximity I was sat next to him, but all week I've just had Messi, Messi in my head from Jules celebrating that first goal for PSG.
My daughter sings it all the time. It's amazing.
Good that you got your celebration in while you could, Jules, because of course the weekend wasn't quite so special for Messi or PSG.
But we all know that Rennes is a much better team than Manchester City anyway. So in a way, I can understand the defeat.
Well, it's certainly empirically better than Paris Saint-Germain. We'll touch on that game very, very shortly. But let's begin, with a moment of the weekend from you all with Paddy Power. Alvaro.
Well, the moment of the week is a record, James. Iñaki Williams, a striker from Athletic de Bilbao, has played 203 games in a row in La Liga, one more than the previous record holder, who was Larrañaga, former Real Sociedad player. So, from the 20th of April of 2016, he has played in all La Liga games, Iñaki Williams. So, hats off, this is the record for La Pantera, as they call him.
La Pantera. Very nice. Unlike the other Pantera, he works 100% of the time. Rafa, how about for you?
I think it was Philip Kostic's winner against Bayern Munich, 7 minutes from time.
Raus auf Kostic, das ist seine Position. Philipp Kostic, 2-1 Frankfurt. Unglaublich, 7 Minuten vor Schluss.
Frankfurt 1-2-1 against the champions, and this Kostic was the first winning goal scorer for Frankfurt in the capital of Bavaria since 2000.
Good lord.
When Jan Arge Fjortoft managed to do the deed. Big moment.
Do the deed.
Yeah, it was a bad moment for anyone who just published an article talking about how Nagelsmann had fine-tuned Bayern to be even better than before. But we'll touch on
really.
What went wrong.
The trolling going on so far. Wow.
I'll get mine very shortly, I'm sure. Jules, what was your moment of the weekend?
It's a sad one, of course. It's Bernard Tapie passing away, the legendary Marseille owner and president, and who was far more than just that, who had 1,000 lives and who died on Saturday at 78 from cancer. And I mean, we had a show about him during the pandemic because he deserved one, to be fair. And we obviously talked a bit more about him during the show.
Excellent, yeah. Actor, MP, singer, MP, football minister, boss, convict. Everything. Nice of PSG to send him off with a, by you know, with a defeat. You know, as a Marseille, so he would have a. He would
Although, have obviously, as you know, the paradox is he's a pure Paris born and bred kid too. Ah. So that's the big paradox.
Crikey. What a man of many facets. James, your moment of the weekend?
Well, I think it's only appropriate that we go from Sex Panther to Lion. That is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, not a human. It was his 40th birthday. Milan got him a cake, some Prosecco, a nice bottle of red wine. His wife then threw a surprise party on the top floor of the Hyatt Hotel in Milan, which lit up its facade in red numbers, 4-0. Just for Zlatan. Zlatan, by the way, who's played, what, half an hour this season? Feels like he's only played half an hour all year because he's always injured. But many happy returns, Zlatan. Your content is, as always, brilliant.
Putting food on your table, James. While the Lion was absent, the Liao certainly did the business for Milan.
Nice. Nice.
Sunday, as we'll touch on. Later on. Okay, very good. Let's start in La Liga.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shot bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
La Liga, Alvaro, round 7, and crisis for the big two in the Madrid-Barcelona doubleheader. You had Espanyol beating Real Madrid, whilst the Catalan capital's second team got beaten again by Atleti. Let's start, though, with that Espanyol victory over Real Madrid. Only Espanyol's second win of the season, but Real Madrid's second defeat in a couple of days after their shock downing by Sheriff at midweek.
It was a very bad week for Real Madrid. Against Sheriff, it was more than an accident, I believe. It's one of those losses that they make you lose a little bit of reputation among your opponents. And Real Madrid probably cannot afford many losses like that. At the end of the day, they are the best club in Champions League history, and suddenly they are losing against a club that many of the Real Madrid supporters probably didn't know about a couple of months ago. And against Espanyol, I think Real Madrid had an abysmal game as well. I want to pinpoint, number one, that Espanyol was brilliant because the likes of Raúl de Tomás and Barba and all the players involved and the manager, Vicente Moreno, they have, returned to La Liga and they seem to be up for the challenge. The team hasn't changed a lot from the team that got relegated to the second division in 2020. In fact, the investment, or the biggest investment that Espanyol did in the past or in the last 18 months was in January 2020 when they signed Heavy in order to avoid relegation. Well, they got relegated, they got back to La Liga, and so far they've been very impressive. They almost drew against Atlético de Madrid, but they lost in the last second. Against Real Madrid, they beat them. And Real Madrid, they were showing that sometimes it's all a one-man show. Benzema had to do everything. By the way, Benzema is doing everything. He has scored already 9 goals in La Liga, and his goal against Espanyol was beautiful, really nice as well. His shape is fantastic, but Benzema alone wasn't enough. And I think that it was a well-deserved loss for Real Madrid and a very bad week for them because, if they had done the logical thing, they would have like a proper cushion at the top of the table, and they have lost that chance because this weekend Barcelona has lost, because Sevilla has lost, and Real Sociedad, who is also fighting for the top positions, have drawn. But yeah, they didn't manage to beat Espanyol.
So what's behind this fall-off in form? Because there was the draw with Villarreal last weekend, then the midweek defeat, and then this. And looking really shaky at the back. It's almost like letting Ramos and Varane go has not been a benefit to them.
Yeah, I think that was never going to work very well for Real Madrid. But you could argue as well that having David Alaba and whoever played alongside him was enough, at least not to be disastrous in defense. I think that the problem is far bigger than who is playing in the centre-back position. I think that Casemiro hasn't been at his best this season, and he offers so much help to the defenders. I believe that when Ferland Mendy is back, probably he will play on the left. He's a very good defensive left-back. That will send Alaba to the centre-back altogether with Militao, and when Carvajal is back, because he's another absentee, Real Madrid is going to have a very competent defender on the right as well. So I believe that this can be improved, but yes, it's true that defensively Real Madrid is not doing very well. And at the beginning of the season, we were saying that despite their defensive deficiencies, Real Madrid was still very entertaining, that they were winning games. Vinicius Junior was scoring goals, but they haven't been entertaining in the last couple of weeks. Against Villarreal, they were reduced to 0 goals. They scored only one against Sheriff, even though they could have scored 4 or 5. Yes, we know that. And against Espanyol, I think that they weren't the better team at all. So, yes, there are things to address in there. And I really want to also underline that I think that Carlo Ancelotti is not getting his rotations right. Sometimes he's putting in the team too much athleticism. Sometimes he's using Toni Kroos and Modric. Toni Kroos is back, and all together they don't seem to be able to handle in midfield. So he has to tune a little bit better the rotations as well. Probably he's getting to know the squad too, and I will give him some time. The good thing for Real Madrid is that they are still topping the table, but they haven't played any high-profile game so far, only in the Champions League against Inter. So let's see what they do against Barcelona, against Atletico, or against Sevilla.
Okay, they are currently level on points with Atletico and Real Sociedad, who drew with Mallorca at the top of La Liga, 3 points above Sevilla, who had their first defeat this weekend away at Granada. Barcelona dropped to ninth after a 2-0 defeat away at Atletico. Crikey, Luis Suarez getting his revenge here in his goal celebration, simulating a phone call after Koeman dumped him by phone. Crikey, this was big.
It was very big. I'm not too convinced about Luis Suarez's explanation about the phone call thing, because they asked him after the game, why did you do it? And he said literally, I do it for those who know that I still have the same phone number and I am still using my phone. And then he said, it's not for Koeman, but if he wants to take this personally, it's fine. But it was a joke for my guys. I'm not too sure about that. I'm not, you know, going to speculate what is it about. But the truth is that Luis Suarez, when Koeman arrived at Barcelona, he was ostracized. And he was training football in one of the small grounds at Barcelona's training ground. So, of course, he's unhappy about how his situation was dealt back in the day. And, you know, for Barcelona, it was another terrible night. They haven't won any high-profile game over the last 2 years, probably. The only one that I can remember of, and James maybe may correct me, but I think that they beat Juventus in the Champions League last season in the group stage at Juve ground. But then Juventus inflicted them a defeat at the Camp Nou. So that was the only high-profile game that they have won with Ronald Koeman. John Laporta, the president of Barcelona, said before the game that Ronald Koeman was going to continue at Barcelona. Let's see for how long. But it looks like during this international break, he's not going to be sacked. But the team has a problem with the scoring. Gerard Piqué said at the end of the game that they could have played for 3 hours and they wouldn't have scored. And in all fairness, that is very true. I mean, if you check the numbers, I mean, I'm just going to recap some numbers. I mean, 15-16 season, when Messi, Neymar and Suarez played together, they were ripping apart everyone and they scored all together 131 goals. Then Neymar left, Barcelona started scoring less goals, and over the last 4 seasons, Lionel Messi always scored about the 30% of the team's goals. Last season, he scored the 35% goals of Barcelona in La Liga. And Lionel Messi has gone, and Antoine Griezmann left in the deadline day. So, right now, it's all about Memphis and Luke de Jong, what they can do up front, just crossing the fingers for Ansu Fati to be the player that he was, and for Dembélé to recover. So, this Barcelona team is having a problem with scoring, and they need to start scoring very quickly, because I would say that in La Liga the situation is not critical, but it is in the Champions League, because they got 0 points. And now they have to make sure that they win at least 3 games if they want to be in the next round of the competition.
I'm very surprised Jules isn't rubbing it in, because where's Messi now?
He's been a nice man so far.
I've just taken a decision to never say the name of the Barcelona manager anymore, because he's dead to me. So, I'm happy to say the Dutch guy, the manager, the guy on the bench. But keeping him is just a waste of time. Whether they have the money or not to sack him, I don't care. It's just a waste of time.
Maybe they could get De Boer to replace him.
That would be great.
So it's curious, though. Big clubs and Barcelona are all struggling this week after the Champions League. Bayern getting beaten, Paris Saint-Germain getting beaten, Real Madrid, as we heard. Is there some kind of common link between that, do you think, Rafa, Jules?
I mean, from Bayern's point of view, no, because they lost a game that they should have won fairly easily. They created so many chances against Frankfurt. They found Kevin Trapp off former PSG fame, of course, in splendid form, thwarting a Lewandowski point-blank save. Gnabry hit the post of an empty goal. So there's nothing that Bayern did really wrong, apart from maybe one or two lapses of concentrations at their back, but the game was good enough in terms of the performance to warrant yet another win. So I don't think we can read too much into it. And the players and Nagelsmann seemed fairly relaxed afterwards because of that.
Okay. What about to PSG, Jules?
Yeah, I think so. PSG didn't play well apart from 20 minutes in the first half, so it's not the same as Bayern. But I think maybe physically it starts to get a bit tiring. We saw Leipzig leaving it quite late, to be fair, before winning. Dortmund as well. Chelsea struggled. They won, but really late too. United struggled as well. So maybe there's something, and maybe this international break comes at the right time for some clubs who've been playing every 3 days for the last two months, pretty much.
And not just playing. Given what happened against Rennes, might it be that PSG's midweek partying after the win over Man City at the Medellin nightclub wasn't such a good idea, Jules? Maybe.
Maybe, although they had the Wednesday off, so you could, you know, with Wednesday off, you can go out and party, and the Medellin is certainly one of the favourite places for Marco Verratti, especially, and Kylian Mbappe and Neymar too.
Right. And all of them have exemplary fitness records, so that's
best about Verratti is that, considering he's only trained twice before the game, hadn't played for a month, came off because he could not run anymore, he had cramps, and then still found somehow the energy to go to the nightclub up to 5 a.m. I find that absolutely amazing. He's such a legend. And that's why we love him so much.
But know? Jules, no suggestions that any of them played between the lines at Medellin, right?
That's very true. Or in the pocket.
We'll hear more about those Medellin kids a little bit later on. But let's just get a bit more from La Liga. You mentioned Iñaki Williams with his extraordinary record. Also worth noting this week, Alvaro, the first managerial casualty of the season.
Yeah, Paco. Paco López, he's been sacked as Levante manager. They are winless this season. The Levante is winless in the last 16 La Liga games. And it's a real shame because I think that the president of Levante wanted to keep him, but, you know, the results just weren't not good enough, and Levante needs something. They need an electroshock, if you like, and a new manager will certainly bring that. The truth is that with Paco, Levante found stability. I cannot recall in my life, and probably in the last 60 years, a Levante team that has stayed in the top flight for such a long time. And this team has been about entertaining as well. Some of the finest La Liga games that we have seen over the last years, they have had Levante there. For example, this season there was an excellent 3-3 between Real Madrid and them. Levante has been able to beat Real Madrid a few times, also Barcelona, also Atletico. So, you know, I don't think that Paco will have any problem to find a new job in La Liga anytime soon, considering as well that there are some managers who are very close to being sacked too. So if
Koeman.
Paco wants... No, Mitchell, for example, is one of them. Or Robert Moreno from Granada. So let's see. But I think that one of the best stints of Levante in La Liga, or the best periods, have had... Paco as the manager of them.
Did I see an extraordinary link between Brendan Rodgers and the Barcelona job, by the way, over the weekend?
You saw that, probably, yeah. I think that it comes more from English media, English outlets. I remember as well when Ernesto Valverde, before he signed for Barcelona, Arsene Wenger was one of the candidates in England. And then Barcelona, normally they do their thing. They go for managers who have played for Barcelona, who know the Barcelona style. The thing is that the Cruyff style and all that, it's a word that has been deteriorated over the time as well, because they use it too lightly, I think. But the main idea of John Laporta, ideally, he wouldn't like to keep Ronald Koeman. The thing is that there is no strong candidate and there is no a lot of money to sack the manager, that to start with. And secondly, I think that they want to make the next step very carefully because John Laporta has never sacked a manager. When he was the president of Barcelona, he had Frank Rijkaard and then he had Pep Guardiola. He never sacked any of them, I believe. And I don't think that this is a president who likes to make decisions like this. He wants to stick to someone he believes in. So he's going to wait. Xavi should be the next one. Robert Martinez, the Belgian manager, has been one of the candidates. But let's stop. Let's wait and see. Last Saturday, John Laporta said that Koeman will be his manager. We don't know for how long, but at least for at least two more weeks.
By the way, if you enjoyed Villarreal's ultimately doomed performance away at Old Trafford last midweek, you'll be excited to know that that fellow, Arnaud Danjuma, was once again on form
Groenveld.
This weekend.
Who?
Yeah. All my life I called him the Groenveld until...
Yeah, only
until,
you and James
until August.
Yeah, right. Only you and James Horncastle call him.
Right, so the official team list has his name as Groenveld. But anyway, you'll have seen him, listener, as Danjuma the other day against Man United. He looked great, and he certainly did at the weekend as Villarreal beat Betis, highly touted by Alvaro Betis, 2-0. But so the Groenveld thing, explain that, James or Alvaro.
I can't explain it. I've done commentaries with him on the pitch, calling him like that, Groenveld. Maybe I've been very unprofessional. I don't know. But I never called him Danjuma until August.
James?
I mean, logic would tell us that one of his parents is called Groenveld.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah. It's as simple as that.
That's how it works, James Richardson.
All right. Well, we'll leave that hot topic, listener. Next up, Jules.
Yeah, he will soon link up with Serge Aurier, of course, who is signed for Villarreal as a free agent. And Unai Emery worked with him and his craziness in Paris before, so they know each other well.
That's an interesting addition. When was that decided?
It will happen. It will happen if it hasn't happened already. It's going to happen soon. I mean, it's a clever signing because Villarreal has been playing with Juan Foyt as a right back, and he's clearly not a right back. He can offer a service in that position, but he cannot be your right back, looking ahead to the season.
Fair enough. All right, next up, Ligue 1.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Jules, former Marseille owner Bernard Tapie. Did you ever meet him?
Never.
Oh.
No, never. My dad met him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
What was the occasion?
Because during one of the many trials that he had regarding... You know, doping. He obviously went to jail for 9 months for match fixing and all of that. But there was also another trial about doping that some of the Marseille players were doped before Champions League game, Champions League final, etc., etc. And my dad got somehow involved because he's a doctor and all of that. So my dad met him, but I never, unfortunately, never met him.
Okay. What's your best Tapie story then?
There are so many, really there are, because he also did great things. And I think he was a great guy if you just focus on the positives. And yet there's a lot of negatives, but the positive, how he could make you believe that anything was possible, where he could build everything he touched for a moment. That's the problem, though. The rise to success was such a short time and certainly much shorter than the fall that he experienced in pretty much everything, whether it's cycling, you know, TV shows, as an actor, as an MP, as a government minister, as a football man, or chairman, owner, even sporting director when he came back to Marseille in the early 2000s. But he he had this incredible quality of making you believe that anything was possible, that you could do it together. And that's what everybody said from Tony Cascarino in the Times on Monday when we recorded this, which I thought was a wonderful testimony about Bernard Tapie. But everybody that's known him or met him, how demanding he was for sure, but also how incredibly persuasive he was and convincing in making you believe and do things, even the bad things, but everything like he wanted it. And I think that's an incredible quality to have in a way, if you use it well. The problem is, of course, all the bad things. And that will also forever be there with him. But when you see how much Marseille is mourning Bernard Tapie today and since the weekend, you can realize that he gave them more than happiness. It was like a god over there. And I think it should not just be about the bad things that he did, but also the really positive things that he did for millions of people.
Mm. Certainly for the club, extraordinary period of success. 5 French titles during his ownership and the Champions League title as well. Although, did they ever get those titles taken away from them, or were they just kind of left with an asterisk?
Only one league title had been taken away from Marseille, is the one in 92-93 season, when the one just before they won the Champions League final, when to make sure that the Valenciennes players didn't play 100% and were too physical or aggressive and risk some of the Marseille players to get injured, he paid some off, to play softly. So that's the one that was... But there's so many stories. I mean, maybe the best one, just quickly to finish on him, was the one in the Champions League before the semi-final in Moscow, when this guy from the club came up in the press box with a little piece of paper and passed it on to all the French journalists who were there. And when you opened the paper, it was the score of the game, and that was before the game started. So it's pretty good.
You have to laugh. I remember Arsene Wenger found him particularly hilarious. There you go. Bernard Tapie.
Arsene always used to say that when the Marseille-Monaco happened and he was on the Monaco bench, they were playing at 13 against 9 because 2 of his players were actually playing for Marseille because they were bribed. So, yeah, that's the idea.
Ah, dearie me. A very colourful life.
Indeed.
Yeah. And Bernard Tapie. Right. Oh, Marseille lost this weekend, Jules. 2-0 at Lille. Lille are back. Marseille back to the drawing board. What's going on?
Exactly, James. That's the right way. No wins in 4 now for Marseille. They're struggling. They're not as entertaining as they were before. But it's not even that. You could see they're a bit tired, and you could see that Sampaoli is a bit struggling to find the answers to the problems they have. They concede goals, and they were fairly beaten by Lille, who were really good. And you're right, they're back, and I think they're going to get better and better because Renato Sanchez is going to come back soon, because Ikone and Bamba are going back to their best form. And they were very good at the weekend. And for Marseille, I think it is a bit worrying, because as good as we saw them earlier in the season, now they're really playing average football.
Marseille now lying 5th, fully 10 points behind Paris Saint-Germain, who, as we mentioned quite extensively, also lost this week against Rennes. This happens all the time with Rennes and Bruno Genesio. Why is that, Jules?
Yeah, I don't know. In fairness, Rennes played well and they took their chances well. And Gaëtan Laborde, who has scored 6 goals now in the 7 games that he played in Ligue 1 this season, is playing really great. They scored just before the break and just after the break. PSG had a good spell in the first half where Mbappé missed a big chance. Messi hit the bar. Messi was really good, but all the question marks this morning in France are over Neymar. Maybe he was already thinking about meeting up again with his sister in Brazil during international break or something, but he was certainly not in Rennes. That was not him playing with the number 10 on his shirt. Maybe it was James Horncastle, I don't know. But I don't know, something.
If I were playing, it would not be Rennes. It would be horrendous. There you go.
I mean, I'm sure even you could have done better, because that was dreadful, really bad. And I don't think he was just into the game at all. I don't think he wanted to be there, but that was really bad. And I think already the team with that front four, the M&M plus Di Maria, is already a bit unbalanced, as we've explained many times. If on top of that, individually, those players are no good, Mbappé missing chances, Neymar being completely absent, Di Maria, so-and-so. There was only Messi really the first half. And then I think he also gave up, saying like, listen, I'm the only one trying here. You know, stuff this. I'm not doing it anymore. So that second half was terrible.
Seriously?
They had no shot on target in the end. Yeah, it was bad. Apart from those 25 minutes in the first half, the rest was really, really bad.
Seems like they kind of take it in turns to get the hump with the club. This week it's Neymar, previously Messi and Mbappe on other occasions.
I'm not sure Neymar had a hump with anyone. It's just he didn't turn up. He started and played, had a lot of the ball, like the whole team, but didn't really do anything with it. It was really one of his worst games, I think, and he's had some bad ones, but L'Equipe gave him 2 out of 10 in the ratings, which I think is fair, although maybe even slightly generous, because it was really embarrassing kind of performance. So yeah, I don't know. It's funny how you can go from the City game to the Rennes game. And again, maybe if they score early, the chances that they had, it turned very differently, but they didn't. And Rennes played well. And Rennes, as we know, exploited this imbalance and going on the wing, and they were very good. Hakimi had a torrid time against Sulemana, who's really, really such a bright young player. Same on the other side with Nuno Mendes. So in fairness, it was coming, I think, in the league. And it's a good warning sign, I think, for PSG.
Jules, I think that Radio Monte Carlo is going to publish an interview this week with Jérôme Roten and Mbappé.
Yeah, tonight on the show, on the radio show.
Yeah, and Mbappé will admit that he refused to accept the contract extension, or he asked to leave. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly what he said, which we kind of explained on the show before, the fact that he said to the club he wanted to go and that it was down to the club to accept or not. He would be happy to stay. And he says in the interview that he's staying and he's happy and he's been happy all his time in Paris. But he said to the club, I don't want to leave on a free. I want you to get some money from me. I want to do the right thing, which I think from him is a good thing. But he also said, but I won't extend. So it's either you let me go now and you replace me and you use that money to replace me, or I will leave on a free in 1 year. So at least we know now for sure, and again, we've said it before, but we know for sure, because it comes from him, that he's not going to extend his contract now. So he will leave next summer on a free, very likely to Real Madrid. But I think it was good for him to do this interview now, and because he hasn't spoken since the summer and at the end of the transfer window. But this is all why his team had briefed us through the summer anyway. So there's nothing new, really, apart from the fact that now it's him saying it. And in a way, you maybe understand more the position from PSG. It's like, okay, we know you want to go, but we don't think that we can replace you right now, and we don't want to let you go anyway. And that power struggle between them and Real Madrid and the triangle with Mbappé, I think, was quite interesting during the summer, and they clearly decided to sit out on 180 or 200 million euros.
Extraordinary stuff. Anyway, for now, at the top of Ligue 1, it's squeaky bum time, really, for PSG, as their lead drops down to just 6 points over Lens, who are second place after their 2-0 win over Reims. Down at the other end, still bottom, Saint-Étienne.
Quite appropriate, James, given their initials are ass.
James,
that's true. Although it was the 123rd Rhône Derby against between Saint-Étienne and Lyon, under the pouring rain, and it was great. It was absolutely great.
Okay, so this was the Rhône Derby, as you say, with their arch rivals and neighbours. 1-1, it finished. Shout out once again to Les Verts' keeper Étienne Vert, which is mother was a Pantone chart or something like that. And also the Lyon keeper Anthony Lopez, who got sent off for a pretty bizarre sortie out from his area.
Yeah, handball, 10 minutes from time. I'm not sure if the ball would have gone in because he was really far. He was easily 35 yards away from his goal and clearly stopped the ball, but it's impossible for us to say if the ball would have gone in or not. But certainly that helped Saint-Étienne to then come back and get a deserved penalty right at the end for a handball by Denier. And Robbie Kadri, who missed a sitter early on at 0-0 very early in the game and hit the post, this time scored the penalty to make it 1-1. I think it's a fair result, although Lyon played some really good stuff, but Saint-Étienne had some chances. Claude Puel is still there for now. I think a defeat probably would have cost him his place, but now the team responded well to him and they got a very important point against, as you said, the arch rivals and the enemies. So I think he will stay in place for a little bit more, but they need to get more points now and react.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'll have to wait until after the international break, because for now, French football focuses on the Nations League finals, which we'll be talking about later on. Next up, hey, Rafa, tell us about the Bundesliga.
So, Mr. Bielsa, what's troubling you?
Well, Doctor, my translator is constantly undermining me. Last week, I told everyone to take five and get an ice cream, but he told them to run laps and practice their shooting.
Sometimes it seems they don't know what they're doing, but with Paddy Power, you always know you're getting top draw rewards. If one leg of your bet builder on a football game lets you down, get your money back as a free bet. Paddy Power! Pre-match bet builder bets only. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. Min 4 plus legs. Min odds 1/5 per leg. Online exclusive. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Bundesliga has mentioned shock at the Allianz as Bayern get beaten 2-1 by Eintracht Frankfurt. Bayern's first home defeat in 30 games. Is that right, Rafa? Frankfurt's first win away at Bayern in 21 years.
Yeah, it was a shock, and I don't think that Frankfurt necessarily believed that they would get a result, but they played with real courage. They had a go. They defended very, very well and took advantage of Bayern perhaps being slightly below par, certainly in front of goal, where, as we said, they missed a lot of chances, and at the back where Dayo Upamecano didn't look good for the equaliser and didn't look so great in one or two other situations, and also Manuel Neuer with the Philipp Kostic winner, not quite as his usual reliable self. So yeah, all in all, sort of a bad day at the office type performance from Bayern, but nothing that they would, I think, lose too much sleep over. They've been too good and too dominant, even in this game, to think that something fundamentally is wrong that needs fixing.
It does make the situation at the top of the Bundesliga very interesting. Four teams separated by just 1 point. Bayern and Bayer Leverkusen now level with a point behind them. Dortmund, who beat Augsburg 2-1, and Freiburg. Interesting. Worth a shout out for RB Leipzig, certainly, who are down in eighth place, but beat Borkum 3-0 with that man Nkunku getting another brace. Crikey. And yet this is the same side that got beaten by Bruges a few days ago, Rafa.
Yeah, I mean, they were really under pressure. Even in that game, the crowd or sections of the crowd were jeering them because it was 0-0 at half time and they were short of ideas. But Jesse Marsch got lucky, or if you will, was inspired with his substitutions. Dominic Szoboszlai came on and André Silva came on, and Silva scored the opener, and then Bochum kind of collapsed a little bit. And then Nkunku, who is very much the man of the moment, scored two more to make it a very pleasant scoreline. I don't think they're quite out of the woods yet, because this was probably the worst team they've played all season, and in all other games they've really struggled. And there is still, I think, this underlying tension between what Jesse Marsch wants to do and what the team have really been doing under Nagelsmann, and in a way designed to do, which is play a lot more with the ball. With Jesse Marsch, there seems to be sort of a step back to the more extreme transition and pressing game that Leipzig took through the leagues into the Bundesliga when they got promoted for the first time. And I'm not sure, you know, it is a great fit at the moment because you can see that tension play out on the pitch. But that result certainly would help them to have a slightly more quiet international break. But then, of course, our dear friends from PSG will welcome them in the French capital before too long. And that could be another difficult night for them.
Mm. When the Champions League returns. As it stands, though, Rafa, the Bundesliga, the top being so very tight, could you see by Leverkusen, who were brilliant Thursday night in the Europa League away in Glasgow, a 4-0 win at Celtic. Could you see them making an actual stab at the title this time around?
They're certainly playing well enough at the moment to suggest that they can stay the course, if you will. They've been looking really, really good, real fluidity. They played again very well against Bielefeld, 4-0, with Wirtz and Schick being the outstanding performers in that game. And there's real quality, and Gerardo Suone has managed to do something that has eluded Peter Bosch, at least, didn't really find sort of consistent reflection on the pitch, which is that stability that was missing between attack and defence. They seem to have it now, but one is always reluctant to talk Leverkusen up too much because they invariably sort of let you down. I think we can have this conversation if they win their next game in the Bundesliga, which is at home to Bayern.
Mm.
and first meet second after the international break. So that should be very, very interesting. Well, it tells a lot more about how good they really are.
All right. Dortmund, meantime, winning without Haaland this time around and without a clean sheet yet again, but a 2-1 victory over Augsburg. Anything else we should know about this Bundesliga weekend, Rafa?
I think we sort of covered it. Köln, maybe a word for Köln. Maybe a quick word on Freiburg. I mean, they're now the only unbeaten team left in the league. They're fourth, which is incredible considering their player wages are 40 million euros a year. That's the whole squad, not one of them. And it's their best ever start to the Bundesliga. I'm not sure that they will finish there. I think mid-table is more realistic. But considering that they have really very little money and not exactly a squad full of superstars, you have to once again take off your flat cap if you're Steffen Baumgart, the Cologne coach, or your hat, to what Christian Streich is doing with this team, which is the absolute maximum and beyond.
How bad is Haaland's injury?
It's bad enough that he's missing the international games. Certainly Dortmund's saying he cannot play. It's not something that's going to be a long-term problem, but he can't play, and I think Dortmund aren't too happy that he's going to miss a couple of weeks, as indeed they were when Gareth Southgate and the Bellingham family jointly decided, if reports in Germany are to be believed, that he might be better off sitting these games out with England. So Dortmund have their two best players, hopefully fit and ready when the domestic calendar resumes.
Well, fingers crossed, them two. And next up, ahead of our big Nations League chat, it's coming. We'll catch up on the latest from Serie A.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite according to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. And that's got to be good news for all you Man United fans out there, eh? Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. It's over 18s only. And please gamble responsibly.
Battere. Poi si avvicina ancora Zielinski che va al cross in aria. Il colpo di testa. Goal, 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 goal. Rachmani, Rachmani, Rachmani di testa sulla fitta del Napoli.
Serie A, James. Napoli top, Milan second. Last time Napoli started this well, they finished second but set a new club record points total. Last time Milan started this well, they went on to win the title. Both teams with big wins away this Sunday. Milan 3-2 at Atalanta. Napoli, was this their toughest test yet? And how impressed were you with the way they came from behind in Florence?
Toughest test, maybe, given that they faced Juventus when Juventus was still figuring things out. And a bit of a mess under Allegri, because Fiorentina have been one of the revelations so far this season. Certainly really difficult to play against. They came back from behind. It was the seventh game, in this space between the September and October international games and breaks. And usually players are pretty tired by that time. But they keep finding goals from set pieces, really clever ones. I mentioned how they copied Dortmund for the Rachmani goal. Equally, the one they scored against Udinese, a really clever free kick. So they're clearly doing a lot of work on that. And then, they've got a player in Osimhen who has the potential to be the top goal scorer in the league, absolute, without any doubt, because now Ronaldo's gone, Lukaku's gone. You look at Juventus, Allegri says Chiesa can become a striker, but I think only for certain games. Moise Kean is still young. Morata's, Morata. And Dybala is not a striker, although he on his day he can score a lot of goals. Osimhen, the future is his oyster, I suppose. But I think my concern for Napoli isn't so much how they're playing at the moment. It's what happens when the African Cup of Nations comes around.
Right.
Because Koulibaly will go and play for Senegal. Anguissa will go. Osimhen will go and play with Nigeria. And that's the spine of the team. Yeah, those three guys have been magnificent. I mean, Anguissa has been one of the smartest signings, I think, of the summer transfer window. and just he allows them to recover the ball, play higher up the pitch. He's been brilliant. So that's my only doubt about Napoli so far. So we'll see. But yeah, to go and win in Florence this season is much harder. So that's good. I mean, that game in the end was blighted by the racist abuse that Kalidou Koulibaly suffered. It's not the first instance, and unfortunately, this season. No sooner do crowds come back, even just 50% crowds, we've seen Mike Maignan, the Milan goalkeeper, be subjected to racist abuse at the Juventus Stadium when Juventus played Milan. Juventus managed to identify the culprit, kick him out, banning order for life. And then also Timu Bakayoko, the same, only the previous weekend, another Milan player. So this is something that the league's got to get on top of, unfortunately. And I thought Koulibaly was fantastic to call the fan out actually whilst he was there. I mean, it was very kind of face-to-face, confronting him on it, his teammates coming out, Osimhen as well, telling him he needs to sort of go and speak to his family and, you know, ask if he should be behaving that way. He shouldn't be behaving that way. He should be banned for life. He should be prosecuted criminally as well. So so that was the blight on that game. And then, as you say, Milan probably with one of their most impressive performances, if not the most impressive performance, under Stefano Pioli in Bergamo.
Mm. A 3-0 win with a kind of funny bit at the end in which Atalanta suddenly scored two goals. But it was total dominance for a large part of the game. And I mean, is there a weakness in this Milan side? And what happens when Ibrahimovic and Giroud get back into the kind of, you know, in line for the starting lineup again?
Well, they've got more depth, more options, more ways to win games, because not everyone will pose the same problems that Atalanta do to Milan. I thought Stefano Pioli got his strategy spot on. I mean, he's often been criticised for being one-dimensional. His tactics are a bit simplistic, plays 4-2-3-1, doesn't deviate from it. And yet in this game, his game plan was absolutely fantastic, with Kessié dropping into the defence, Teo Hernandez coming into midfield, completely short-circuited the kind of man-marking system that Atalanta play all over the pitch. I think at 1-0, they had opportunities to score earlier, scored the second goal earlier. But in that time, Mike Maignan, who's been absolutely outstanding for them, came up with a couple of big saves on Zappacosta, on Duvan Zapata. And then, I mean, you saw why Milan are leading all the kind of charts on high press, passes per defensive action, because Tonali wins the ball high up the pitch, goes and scores the second goal. And the third was another emphatic finish from Leao. He doesn't really score boring goals anymore, which is magnificent. So, yeah, in terms of a weakness, I think they don't press as well as they did on Sunday night when Zlatan's in the team. I mean, he's 40 years old. He's not as agile as
Do you see him coming back into the team much? Do you think Pioli will
in certain situations? Yeah, I think against certain opponents. I mean, he's got to get himself fit. I mean, he's 40, and you know, it's not just, oh, I need my knee repaired, I have to have surgery. It's, oh, you know, day before the game at Anfield against Liverpool, my Achilles is tight. Now his groin's tight. I mean, it's normal for a player of his age for his body to play tricks on him, no matter how good his physical preparation is. I think, you know, what I would say is, you go back 18 months, Milan lost 5-0 in Bergamo with Stefano Pioli in charge. And at that point, the ownership basically broke glass and said, right, let's sign Zlatan, Salamakers and Kjær. And all of a sudden, that team galvanizes around Zlatan. The young players begin to show their potential. Pioli gets more confident. They start winning games. But I think they've shown that Zlatan served his purpose now, and anything else that they get from him is a bonus, expensive bonus, because they're paying him a lot of money. But I think they've evolved beyond him now. But I do think him and Giroud offer something very different, and they'll come up against different defences and teams with different approaches to Atalanta, where those two guys will be better than say Rebic or whoever else they're playing up front. But Rebic was perfect to play against Atalanta on Sunday night.
Who's playing better football, do you think, between them and Napoli?
It's hard. I think Milan are playing really interesting football at the moment. As I mentioned, this the interchanges of positions, how involved the goalkeeper is, not just in stopping goals, but in his distribution, which allows them to play higher up the pitch, beat presses. Tomori, who's come in, allows them to play with a high line, play high up the pitch. I was reading that piece you referenced from Rafa when you were trolling him about Bayern losing at the weekend. And there's that line from Ralf Rangnick in there about when you play that high press and you keep winning to get the ball back high up the pitch, you demoralise your opponent. They begin to lose faith, lose belief. And Gasperini said exactly that after the game. He was like, our morale just hit the floor and we lost control. And compliments to Milan, because not many teams have been able to do that to us, certainly in Serie A, maybe in the Champions League, but not in Serie A.
Mm, fair enough. As it stands, they are 2 points behind Napoli. Milan at the top of the table, with Inter a couple of points further back. Juve have climbed up to eighth with a 1-0 win in the Turin derby, slightly against the runner play, that. But also picking up with that result, their first clean sheet in 21 games in the league. Inter, in third place, as mentioned, were also a little bit fortunate to get 3 points in their trip to Sassuolo. A 2-1 victory there. Another disappointing result prior to that midweek in the Champions League. And the other really big bit of bad news last week for the Nerazzurri was the announcement of those record-breaking losses, James. 211 million euro for the 2020-21 season. Does this presage another set of big names heading out the door, do you think, for Inter?
Well, 245 million loss is the second biggest in Europe's top five leagues. The only club that I say better, if you can use better in this context, that number is Barcelona. I think that kind of says it all, really. Inter have got a lot of obligations that they've still got to meet, which is they have this loan from Oaktree, this hedge fund in the States, 275 million. That'll come at an interest, and they've only had 80 million of that so far. So I think that's why you saw the kind of scale of player sales of Lukaku in addition to Hakimi. In the summer, and then they've got these bonds maturing. Suning likes to take on debt. That's how they've operated as a business for a long time. There's also a sense: are they vulnerable to contagion from what's happening with Evergrande in China as well? So I don't think Inter's problems are solved, even if they are able to operate in a more comfortable position than they were prior to getting that loan from Oaktree.
But in terms of player departures, do you think that's something that the Inter fans should prepare themselves for, either at Christmas or next summer?
Not at Christmas, because I just don't think there's a market for selling players in that period. I think come the end of the year, end of the season, it's very likely, because they've got to become a much more disciplined, self-sustainable model. And frankly, their wage bill is colossal. Even with Lukaku going, even with Hakimi going, they've still got Alexis Sanchez on 7 million net. Alexis hardly ever plays. So things like that still indicate that Inter need to go on a strict diet. A strict diet will inevitably bring one or two other sales.
Mm. All righty. Well, in the short-term-ish future, they got a trip down to Lazio when Serie A resumes, which will be fun for Simone Inzaghi, who's just made the move north as Inter manager. Juve taking on Roma in the next round of games as well. But before any of that, it's Nations League time. So next up, let's have a quick look ahead to this week's exciting tournament in Turin and Milan.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Oh, late breaking news. Alvaro.
Yep, another manager has been sacked in La Liga. It's Mitchell, the Getafe manager. Getafe was terrible in La Liga this season. And even though Mitchell...
Fashion week.
I was going to say, in case you'd forgotten.
even though Mitchell is a personal friend of Ángel Torres, Getafe owner, the owner of Getafe couldn't keep him for any longer. Getafe needs something new, a new manager. And apparently, Quique Sánchez Flores is the main candidate to be the new Getafe manager, which will tell you that... History is circular because Quique Sánchez Flores managed Getafe a long time ago. Mitchell, this was his second spell at Getafe too. So it could be a little bit like having Jupp Heynckes back at Bayern Munich, something like that. So Mitchell is out.
So be mean for Jupp to compare him to Mitchell or Fashion Week, you know.
Mitchell was a fine player, man. I mean, yeah, maybe his managerial history is not great. But...
We all know that. He's a terrible manager, man.
It was fantastic.
Jules, who's your favourite manager?
Certainly not Fashion Week, that's for sure. I mean, Okay. Can you imagine if the manager is that bad that the players nickname him Fashion Week
right.
in Marseille, where they don't even have a Fashion Week? I'm like, right. I mean, this must be really bad.
I mean, there are worse nicknames I'm sure the managers have received. But we hear a lot about managers who you don't rate. So who do you rate? Who's your number one?
Not Valverde.
No. And not the Dutch guy currently on the Barca bench or the former Dutch guy on the Netherlands bench. My number one now. Pep, I think.
Yeah.
Still think that he...
Not Poch.
Not Poch yet. No, come on. Not Poch. Or not Pioli. Or not, but I like... I was at Swallow last night and I was catching up with all the football I missed because it was my sister's wedding this weekend.
Oh, congratulations.
And I love the way that Swallow played against, with a very young Brighton manager too.
Dionisi.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, but Pep, I think Pep has to be the first choice right now.
Okay, everyone happy with Pep as Jules' choice, Rafa?
Yes.
There you go. All right then. Nations League, everyone. Spain. Hooray. France. Hurrah. Italy. Woof. Not Germany, Rafa. Pumps the next
Germany
one.
Germany are not quite... I was going to say, it's the first time the four of us... Oh, no, Germany.
It's Belgium. Belgium. Ah. It's the Nations League finals, which slowly, secretly, UEFA have been preparing to unleash upon an unsuspecting world. At least in the UK, very few people are aware of this. Perhaps in these respective nations... People are agog. They've been whipped up into a state of feverish excitement over the semi-finals on Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday, Italy against Spain at San Siro. Thursday in Turin, France against Belgium. And two great matchups, you have to say. Both recent semi-finals. Italy-Spain from this summer's Euro Championships and France-Belgium from the 2018 World Cup. Woof. Are people excited about this in France, Spain, Italy, Belgium? Alvaro?
Not that much. I think that in Spain, the main thing has been the dissection of Luis Enrique's squad more than who do they play against.
Okay. Is there not a big revenge narrative, though, given that they are playing against Italy, who beat them on penalties in the semi-finals?
No, not really this time. Maybe there is a little bit of a build-up over the next couple of days, but I don't think so. Again, the fact that there are not many Real Madrid players, Spain is struggling to qualify for the World Cup and all that, is basically basically taking all the narrative, more than the Nations League.
Okay. Italy, who put Spain out, let me remind you, Alvaro, at Wembley on penalties, Spain had 70% possession, 16 shots to Italy's 7. Pedri will be absent this time, is that right?
Pedri will be absent. Spain has many absentees, in fact, because Dani Olmo is not there, Morata is not there, Gerard Moreno is not there. So players who can be dangerous. They are going to be missing. There are some new players like Jeremy Pino, for example, or Gavi from Barcelona, that they might get a chance. I believe that the reason why Luis Enrique is capping so many young players is because he takes the November fixtures more seriously than these ones. Because as I said before, Spain has to qualify for the World Cup. I think that Spain will try to dominate the game the same way. And I remember very well that against Italy, Spain managed to give Jorginho a torrid time, just putting Dani Olmo behind him, just doing whatever he wanted. Let's see who the new Dani Olmo for Spain can be, considering the player from Leipzig is absent. But I think that this is a good game, but Italy has better individuals to win it, definitely.
I'm just having a quick check on the Spain, currently top of the World Cup qualifying group with a 4-point lead over Sweden. Why are you so... Oh, I see, but they played two games more than the Swedes and the Greeks.
Yeah,
right.
That's it. It's going to be tough. I think that Greece did a massive favour to Spain because they beat Sweden. And now Spain depends on their own results to qualify, but there is a potential World Cup qualifier between Spain and Sweden coming up very soon, and whoever wins that game is going to qualify for the World Cup as first. And I think that Spain has been far from convincing over the last three or four games, and all the good spirits that came from the Euro, they are pretty much gone, because, as I said, the team hasn't been any consistent.
Crikey. All right, bit of a sideshow for Spain. What about for the Italians, James, on that all-time world record of 37 games unbeaten now?
Yeah, I did see Luis Enrique saying that all these records have to come to an end at some point, which is true. I think Italy will be relieved that Dani Olmo is not playing because he was absolutely outstanding in that semi-final. Unfortunately for him, he then missed the first penalty in the shootout, which was the only blemish on what was brilliant display from him. But Mancini's mainly gone with continuity. He's gone with the guys who helped him win the European Championship. There's a couple of injuries on Sunday night affecting Atalanta, Toloi, and also Piscina. So Davide Calabria scored Milan's opening goal. He's coming for Toloi, and Federico Di Marco from Inter is taking the place of Piscina. So they're the only two new faces. Pellegrini's also in. Pellegrini scored Roma's first goal against Empoli, signed a new contract. He was a late withdrawal from the Euro squad because he got an injury, so he was aggrieved to miss it. But apart from that, I think it will be more or less the same team that we saw in the Euros as well.
Did he call up Lorenzo Lucca in the end, as he was threatening to do, the kind of 2-metre-tall second division striker who's tearing it up?
The Tower of Pisa. No, he didn't give. He didn't want to give a Lucca. I think he's with the under 21s, as is
right. Okay.
As is Tonali still, because there was some speculation late Sunday night after a very good Tonali performance that Tonali would move up from the under 21s, who's captaining at the moment, back to the first team, but that hasn't come to pass.
All right, James, crackling with excitement there, like Alvaro, about the prospect of this semi-final. Jules, how about you and with the French and the clash with Belgium on Thursday? Didier Deschamps' France had a brilliant qualifying for these final games, but since then have had an absolutely rotten run of form.
That's right, James, because before they won against Finland, they hadn't won in five draws in a row as well. And then the defeat, obviously, on pens against Switzerland at the Euros. Actually, if you look at the four semi-finalists, only Belgium have won the three games since the Euros. From Spain, Italy and France, all of them, I mean, Italy had a win eventually after two draws. Spain lost in Sweden, but then won two in a row. And France won that game against Finland. But it was not great for them in the last international break at all for the other three. So it'll be very interesting. And I think Deschamps will play with a back three like he did against Finland. For the first time in a very long time, we've got two brothers with the national team, as the two Hernandez made it this time. We had Theo last month, but his brother was injured. Now his brother Luca is back, so they're both together. Which I just love the idea. Can you imagine as a kid with your brother dreaming of one day playing for your country together? And there's a reason why it's so rare, not just in France, but everywhere, is because it's that difficult. So well done to them, especially when you know about their background and their history as a family. I think it was even tougher for them. So well done to them. And yeah, I'm curious to see what Deschamps does, how he plays. But knowing that Martinez and Bellingham would play with a back three, I think it'd be very clever from the French to do the same.
I'm just trying to think of footballing brothers, internationally speaking. Well, the Nevilles would be the prime candidates. Yeah, you've got the Koemans and the De Boers.
Yeah, yeah, but there's not that many. In France, we've had...
The Charltons.
Yeah, we've had the...
The Baresis.
They play for Italy together. Did they feature for Italy together?
The Hazards. As well.
I'm sure Beppe Hazard, got Franco, or Franco got Beppe a call up at some stage, surely.
Right. The other Baresi. Rafa?
The Hoeneß brothers, the Rummenigge brothers.
Okay, there we go.
The Förster brothers.
Nice.
The Alofs brothers.
Okay.
Laudrup brothers, the Yaya Touré brothers. The Laudrup brothers.
Just to clarify,
yep.
Beppe Baresi, 18 caps for Italy.
Okay, there you go. But were any of them with his brother?
James. I imagine that given he was playing between 1979 and 1986.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there was maybe mm-hmm. one or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Anyway, good Lord, it seems like we've got drawn off the topic with this Nations
League
final.
That's a good, it's a good quiz, you know, quiz question that, brothers in football.
Right.
In Spain, the Salinas brother, Julio Salinas and his brother, Pachi.
Okay.
I have to research for that, by the way.
Nice one, Alvaro. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. So France with a bit of a game on against Belgium Thursday night in Turin. The final takes place Sunday night at San Siro. And yes, Rafa, there is a third fourth playoff earlier that day, excitingly. Wow. That then is what's coming up, and we'll be reacting to that next time out on Totally Football Show European Edition. Anything else you'd like to leave us with, Alvaro, Rafa, James or Julien, before we sign off this edition?
There was that great story about Empoli finally receiving the last instalment of a transfer fee. They sold a player to Fenerbahce a few years ago called Miha Zajic, they were due to pay something like, I don't know, 10 million, three installments. And Fenerbahce said, yeah, we've paid you the last installment. And Empoli were like, no, we haven't got it. It turned out that they put in the wrong bank details and they had gone to a Dutch car dealer. Yeah.
Who never said anything.
Who is like, oh, you know, this is my money. That was great. I loved it.
They had to take him to court to get the money.
Yeah. Yeah, eventually. Yeah. So they got it back and now Empoli have got it. So, you know, boom.
Brilliant. All right. Yeah. Was he actually a car dealer or was his name Van Dealer or something like that?
Yeah, good, James. I don't know. Yeah, I like that story. Van Dealer. Boom.
Okay. Good. All right, then. That's it then for today's show. Listen, thank you so much for being with us right to the end. Look forward to catching up with you after the international break. But for now, it's many thanks to Alvaro and Rafa and Jules and James and producer Charlie. Have yourself a splendid Sosta and we'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.